AI, cybersecurity, privacy, and open source. Do these words go together? Well, yes, they do. Because AI can be used to protect our systems, protect many aspects in terms of cybersecurity. And if a product is available open source, then it's available for greater use, and hence it can learn more quickly, and there is more leverage for the provider of the product. Well, that is exactly what we are going to talk about. Of course, it's technical in nature, because cybersecurity or protecting IP and all these things do get technical. But we are going to have an exciting conversation with Philippe Humeau on this topic, who's also the CEO and founder of CrowdSec. Let's go and talk.
Hello, and welcome to the Fit for Privacy podcast with Punit Bhatia. This is the podcast for those who care about their privacy. Here, your host, Punit Bhatia, has conversations with industry leaders about their perspectives, ideas, and opinions relating to privacy, data protection, and related matters. Be aware that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not legal advice. Let us get started.
So here we are with Philippe. Philippe, welcome to the Fit for Privacy podcast.
Thank you, Punit, for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. So in your view, how is AI impacting the cybersecurity and privacy landscape?
I think many people consider AI as, perceive AI as this tool capable of writing, very good hooking contents and phishing emails to trap the users. But it's much, much more than that. In our books, the AI, we call it AI, will be able to puppet other sub-AI generating text, generating images, generating videos of you, of a CEO that is usually exposed, and we have a lot of samples and a lot of data to actually create fake about him or her. It will be able to crawl all your social networks of all your employees to see what are their trends, what are they attracted to, what is a good profile to try to fish or not. To be able also to scan the whole perimeter of your company, whether it's IT or persons, and all of a sudden unleash massive attacks that would be piloted by this global offensive AI. And it can have modules like vulnerability, exploitation, fuzzing. We have established that there is between 10 and 12 different modules that the global AI could puppet and leverage in order to attack your company, for example. So it's dangerous. We have to deal with this.
Of course, it is very dangerous. We have to deal with it. But I think there are quite a few positive use cases when we talk about cybersecurity and privacy, where AI can help protect data, help protect assets, and also companies. Can we talk about that? Because, of course, we can scare people. That's always easy. This will go wrong, that will go wrong. But a lot of right can be done by AI, like you mentioned. You can set up phishing emails or phishing systems, or you can set up anti-phishing systems, you can set up anti-malware system, and AI can do a better job than what we do in terms of monitoring. Maybe we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So the first use case I see that will be that is already changing the lines, and that will be changing the lines in the future, is the one where AI is analyzing the code and checking for vulnerabilities before it's released, before it's in production. And here, AIs are very good already at writing code and at analyzing code. And I think the mix between static analysis and dynamic analysis of code will be massively enhanced by AI training. Indeed, detecting fraud is also a job that AI is very good at, obviously, because it's capable of generating it. It's also capable of identifying it, which is a great asset. And I think we will soon see AIs also that will be like a member of your company, a virtual member of your company, like a canary in a mine. And if it's scanned, if it's pulled on network and so on, then it will ring the bell, right? Like the goose in Rome, old Rome, that would tell the soldier that something is off, right? So it would be the same thing. There are plenty of use cases where AI is also capable of sorting the noise from the real threat. So it's a tool. Again, like you said, it's a tool. It's equally good or bad. It all depends on how you use it and who uses it.
Absolutely. It's like the guns, they can be used to protect people or they can be used to kill people, and it depends who's using it. Mm-hmm. But when we talk about AI can generate code, do you really believe AI can generate good quality code?
Yes, yes. Actually, what we see, it depends also a lot on the language and the model of the context of the software you're designing. But yes, more or less, AI is capable of designing very decent code. And it's inspired from, most of them are inspired a lot from the content seen on GitHub. One could argue that the quality is varying a lot on GitHub, which would be true. Nevertheless, there are ways to curate those AI so that they reproduce rather the good code than the bad code. And we already see things like Copilot, for example, that are very impressive into writing very decent code. So you start writing a function, you name it properly, and then it will unfold the whole function. And most of times, it's very accurate and very correct. So we will probably also see AI analyzing where your code is getting inputs, right? Strings that come from outside, and which triggers usually, which can trigger buffer overflow, heap overflow, stack overflows, very, very, very bad vulnerabilities, very dangerous ones. And it will be, or it is already able for some of them, to identify the weak spots here. Oh, careful, this one is not controlled properly. Or this thing can be passed on until that point where it could be, you know, triggered or be dangerous. So yes, it's in the making. And for some of them, it's already done. And what they do is very efficient already.
I think what I was reading last week was that in AI, if you ask it to generate code after giving it good context, it can replace a lot of software development jobs. Of course, the software developers, the good ones, can write code about AI, but the AI can itself generate very good code, provided you give it good context. So it's like guiding your developer, telling him all the context. If you do that, then it does generate good quality code. But then if we say, talk about cybersecurity and cyberware, how do we minimize the cyber risk, or we call it limit the zero-day attacks in multiple firewalls or multiplayer firewalls? Why is it important and how do you do it? Because
There is one thing that is in scarcity over the internet, which is IP addresses, public IP addresses, right? At least in IPv4, but it's also kind of true in IPv6. It's a limited number. And it's painful for the attackers to relocate their operations, to take new IP addresses and so on. So it is where we can strike and tremendously reduce their nuisance capacity. You can see it like a missile if you want. There is a rocket part and there's a payload part. The IP address is the rocket part, is the one carrying the payload. If you don't have a carrier, you cannot ship your payload wherever you want to send it. And the goal of having a multiplayer approach or community-driven approach, a network effect approach, is to be able to disable all the rockets. And then if you cannot, because this rocket is unknown or has never been seen before or whatever, then disable the payload. But we think that by disabling massively the rockets, we already prevent the payloads from reaching your walls in the first place, which is probably a good way of doing it. And to do this, we use the crowd and we use a large resource, which is like the internet. Every workload can actually partake into this network, this defensive network.
So you're saying rather than focusing on the attack, you focus on the origin of the attack and try to segregate or say divide different IPs into different in categories and then conquer them. Is that?
Yeah. So if a threat is seen by one network member and then reported by others and others and others in a certain time box, then we say, okay, this IP address is seen in many different places having the same behavior. It's dangerous. So we can block it in real time. So we disable the rocket. So if it's never been seen before or not enough, then eventually the payload will reach your infrastructure, your service, your servers, whatever you're running over the internet, and then we'll diffuse it inside. But it's more costly, so we prefer to diffuse it in flight rather than inside, if you see what I mean. Even though, and I'm pretty sure you will jump on that unit, it's a private data, an IP address, a public IP address. So we have to deal with it with a lot of cautious moves because of GDPR.
Yeah, but it's both ways. On one hand, to protect privacy and cybersecurity, you can segregate some IPs and be careful. That's where the attacks are originating from. But the criminals per se, or the hackers per se, would also be knowing this, and they would be, say, attacking the good IP addresses, isn't it?
Yeah, so first part of your question, yes, we're allowed to use those kind of data, private data, public IP addresses, under the chapter recital 49 of the GDPR. So basically it says, like, if you use those data to protect people from being compromised, then it's a legitimate use and storage of private data. On top of that, we're not storing a name, an email, or something that is very, very personal. It's still personal data, but it's an IP address. It's not directly your name written on it. Second thing is, like, yeah, they can switch an IP address with another one. And the point is to give our users and clients some privacy and some safety. Now, if a cyber criminal is switching from one IP to another, because the previous one is burned, then the goal for us is to remove the previous one as fast as we can, because we don't have any more reports about it, and integrate the new one as fast as we can, because we start getting reports from the network about it. That's why the network effect is really critical. The larger the network, the faster you can clear out IPs and add new IPs into the block list.
And where does your company CrowdSec fit into all this? What does it do, all this or part of it or something different?
No, it does all of this. And this is why it comes back from the time where we were MSPs ourselves. So we were hosting services for third parties, for like web shops and so on online. And we saw a massive attack on an area of our network that was extremely defended. So we could stop it, but we caught like 6,000 IP addresses. We knew they were used by a cyber criminal, but what to do with them? You know, we are not an official company doing this. We are an MSP. Are we allowed to share them with whom? Why people would trust us in the first place, and so on? That was a lot of questions for us, and we thought about a solution, which would be CrowdSec. You know, the system is designed in the first place to do this, and the company is designed in the first place to share those IP addresses that are dangerous and phase them out when they are not dangerous anymore. So the security engine is behavioral. It's looking into your logs. If it sees bad behavior, like someone trying to guess a password, someone scanning you, someone trying to do scalping or injecting a malware or trying to, exploit a vulnerability, then we'll block it locally. This is a payload we diffuse. Now, if we see the same IP having the same behavior at scale in our network, this is where we neutralize the rocket part of it.
But if I'm a CISO, what problem is CrowdSec solving for me?
Well, basically, it's solving your exposed application problem. So, you know, mm-hmm. by exposed application, we can think VPN, we can think Vigo IP, we can think SSH, terminal server, everything remote distant control, VNC, and so on. You can think web, obviously, which is a big, big use case. And the thing is, on those applications that are exposed over the internet, they receive a lot of traffic. And a lot of it is just not legal. It's just not normal usage. So we deal with this exact surface, your exposed surface over the internet, what you expose, your product security, your application security. And we can deal with like DDoS, filtering the various type of attacks, you know, scanning, scalping, you name it.
And is it proactive or is it reactive?
It is proactive in the sense that everything that is blocked at the border by the global block list established by the network effect is proactive. It's blocked before it reaches the payload, the workload, sorry. Now, there is a proactive part that is still proactive because it's reading the logs. So it's supposed to be able to kill the attack chain while it's happening, because everything that is fishy should leave traces in the logs. Now, there are a few cases, edge cases, where you know, your application would take a hit without leaving any trace. And mm-hmm. that we wouldn't be able to defend. Those are usually 0 days, buffer overflow, stack heap overflow that are unknown. But we are here to protect 99%, not 100%. The 99% account already for, you know, more than half of the breaches in the world. The other part of it would be phishing and so on. If you think about it, there are like four big directions. Either you target the users or you target the infrastructure, the machines. And either you do it on distance or you do it close contact, right? So if I take an example of targeting the infrastructure close contact, I would try to attack your Bluetooth, I try to attack your Wi-Fi, I would try to plug a USB stick into your machine. You know, this is physical attack on the infrastructure layer. If I try to do, for example, attack users on distance, I would do phishing, obviously, right? Trying to rig them into downloading something dangerous. And what we deal with is your exposed machine on distance. And this is also something that is interesting in the context of AI, because if AI has a limit, it's the fact that it doesn't have feet. It cannot move physically in the world yet. So meaning it cannot really directly attack your Wi-Fi or your Bluetooth or whatever. It has to use a carrier. It has to use an IP to act on distance on your machines. And this is where we can, you know, create a kill chain. We can cut the chain here at that point.
It seems like quite a niche product or niche thing that you're doing. Are there any other people doing it? Maybe any of your competition doing it?
Well, a competition creating a network effect around cybersecurity, I don't know about it. And I would probably, because network effects are anything but discrete, you know, by a sense, if you run hundreds of thousands of workloads, you're known in the field. So I don't know anyone having the same positioning, same posture as CrowdSec. And also, we would compete with maybe the WAF, but the WAF is more signature-based than behavioral. We would compete with the SOAR, because we are automating the remediation to attacks, but we are not. We don't have this click, 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 click surface where we draw lines like, oh, kill the hacker here, which never worked, by the way. We could be competing with the SIEM, but the SIEM is storing memory and contextualizing what's happening. CrowdSec is just killing the attack. It's not trying to be smart. It's not trying to, you know, establish a causality link or whatever. It's not trying to historize. Just killing the attack, period, and killing it at scale in a network manner. Is there a need? Well, hundreds of thousands of workloads are running CrowdSec, so there is a need. Are we solving a problem? 52% of the intrusions are starting on this exposed application layer. So yes, I think we have something fairly unique, and it's not easy because the Blue Ocean strategy, you know, is weighing a lot on our shoulder. I would love to have direct competitors to be compared with, but that's not the case yet.
Okay. And I understood from your website that you are open source. Is that true?
Yeah. So listen, the problem when you are creating a network effect is you want the largest number of people to be able to use it. So it means that money is the first friction to adoption. So you have to make it for free because, you know, it's easier to spread in this case. If it's free, well, make it open. It helps to adapt to any and all contexts, and it's a proof that you're serious and that your code is not riddled with flaws or with backdoors. And so the free open source model is a mean to an end. We offer the security engine so that everyone can defend him or herself. And in return, we get the signals of those attacks, which create a global network at scale, which we can in return monetize to other people that have means to pay for that.
But then how do you make money? I mean, just curious.
So if you are an individual and you are running like a few security engines, you can do it on your own. It's not a problem, you know. And if ever there is something compromised, it's not that bad. You'd rather not have that happening, but it's not like if it was critical. But when you're a bank or a large corporation or a government or an army or whatever, and you have like hundreds of workloads or thousands of workloads, you want to have an aggregated overview of whatever is happening in your network. Whatever, you know, attacks you get on your exposed layer, on your exposed surface. Is it a coordinated attack? Is it targeted attack? Is this a mass exploitation? Is this just noise you want to cancel? All of these are premium features that we retail in our SaaS product that is puppeting the security engines. And as well, you also get the network effect benefits from, you know, this amazing number of machines running CrowdSec, which gives you signals and allow you to defend yourself better. So basically, we are selling this SaaS system that is protecting you even further down the road and are helping you handle a large number of security engines at once.
And you mentioned that you're using personal data and you believe you're in compliance with GDPR because you're helping protect larger community, and hence, but what's the legal basis you're using? Is it compliance with law? Is it legitimate interest, or what is it?
Yeah, so just for our listeners that may not be very familiar with GDPR, basically the GDPR is about storing the least amount of personal data to render your service, one, keeping it for the least amount of time, two, because if you keep it forever, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Three, secure this data so that they cannot be stolen from you and do the proper job in securing it. And an IP address is considered a public IP address, is considered a personal data. So the way we deal with them is we only use them for 3 months, even though we are allowed for a year, but we only do it for 3 months. And after that, we blur the IP address in the range. So it's not like a 4321 27.5. It's the same, but 0.0/24. So it's not just one IP. It's in a group of IP. It's in a range, like we call it. And in order to correlate it to someone directly, you also have to have a timestamp. And the timestamp is blurred into same, like 11, 23, 47 seconds is between 11 and 12 a.m. So by blurring the IP address and blurring the timestamp, it's enough for us to render our service, but it's not anymore a personal data. So, and then comes the last part of it, which is a legitimate use of it, a legitimate concern, which is Reciprocal 49, which states that basically if you are storing public IP addresses with the other 3 points that we evoked before, you know, least amount of time, least amount of data, and secure it, then you're allowed to do it if it's in the goal of protecting other systems, which is exactly what we are doing. So actually, GDPR accounted for this use case precisely in Reciprocal 49.
Nice. And now, if based on this conversation, someone wants to get in touch with you or wants to know more about CrowdSec, what would be the best way to contact you?
So two ways here to Alice, but the main one would be obviously our website, crowdsec.net, CROWDSEC.net. And there's also obviously the software is free open source available on GitHub. So you can follow us here. There's a Discord community that is available also. And a lot of training material for people that want to step into cybersecurity on academy.crowdsec.net. So all of those galaxy. But if you type in CrowdSec, we will, you know, appear on Google most likely.
You do. At least it for me, it worked.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So that's good to know. You mentioned two ways. You go on GitHub and get this software, or you go to the website and learn more about it, right?
Yeah, you will see how it works, but it's logic behind the premium plans and pricing if you want to. And we have packages for pretty much all the environments, whether they are cloud, containers, local, Windows, Linux, BSD, you name it. I don't know. I think we have more than 3,000 different packages. So you will find the one that is suiting your need. We have even for Unified, Synology, whatever. So.
Good. So that was quite an learning for me because it was a technical conversation in the field of cybersecurity. I learned a lot. And I'm very sure that this is very useful for cybersecurity professionals and that you're also using a bit of the AI aspect of it. And there are use cases of AI, so it was very much interesting for me. I would say, in essence of time, thank you so much, Philip, for your time. And it was wonderful to have you.
My pleasure, Pandit, and I hope we'll have the occasion to do another one.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. If you liked the show, feel free to share it with a friend and write a review. If you have already done so, thank you so much. And if you did not like the show, don't bother and forget about it. Take care and stay safe. Fit for Privacy helps you to create a culture of privacy and manage risks by creating, defining, and implementing a privacy strategy that includes delivering scenario-based training for your staff. We also help those who are looking to get certified in CIPPE, CIPM, and CIPT through on-demand courses that help you prepare and practice for certification exam. Want to know more? Visit www.fitforprivacy.com. That's www.fit4privacy.com. If you have questions or suggestions, drop an email at hello@fitforprivacy.com. Until next time, goodbye.